Nursing unions join each other. Nurse staffing and the economy. College students trading diseases. And a look at meningitis. If that's what you're looking for, well, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd especially like to welcome all of the brand new listeners. We seem to still be picking up quite a few new listeners every week, and I just want to thank those of you that are spreading the word about The Nursing Show. It's a great way to stay current on nursing news, events, and on reviewing some of the information that you may not be running into frequently in your nursing practice. Also, it's a great review for nursing students. So if you haven't been over to check out the site recently, you should definitely do so. Nursingshow.com is your resource for links to everything we talk about in these episodes in the podcast categories there. You'll also find great additional resources, links, additional articles posted throughout the course of each week. And if you'd like to stay on top of that, you can sign up for the Nursing Show newsletter. You'll get the show notes and links emailed to you every single week, as well as an update on recent articles, plus a whole lot more. So check out the Nursing Show website at nursingshow.com. If you have any comments, questions, article suggestions, or if you'd like to make a correction, because hey, I make mistakes sometimes and I want to make sure we get the best information out to the Nursing Show community, you can contact me here by email at comments@nursingshow.com. That's comments@nursingshow.com. And let me know a little bit about what you are interested in or what you want to hear more of here on the show. You can also leave comments and questions and suggestions over at the Nursing Show site. Every single article has a comments link at the bottom of it, so you can just leave a comment right there while you're checking out the site. I've gotten a lot of emails in this week from listeners and other people who have checked out the new site in the Nursing Show family. That is nursingtopstudent.com. It is a site we set up specifically for nursing students, as you can probably tell by the name of the site, but we wanted to make sure that we had the resources necessary to provide really good study aids to nursing students in a manner that they could use. So check it out, nursingtopstudent.com. I'd also urge you to support our sponsors. You know, without their generous support of the show, it would be very difficult to put out a free show for you every week. Well, I'll jump off here with the news, and our lead story is looking at the recent announcement of the three largest nursing unions in the United States, and that's the California Nurses Association, the United American Nurses, and the Massachusetts Nurses Association have all announced that they will be merging into a single joint nurses union. This brings them clearly into the forefront as they were the three largest. Now they are definitely the largest nursing union. And their goals are to organize and continue to support legislation to protect safe nursing practices and help nurses to avoid situations where they are put into a position where they are caring for patients in an unsafe environment, where they have too many patients to care for safely and are overloaded. So one of their key goals, as they have been in all of these organizations over the past years, is to focus on nurse staffing ratios. There are some people who are pros and cons on those particular issues, but it's something that these organizations are pushing for. They're also pushing for organizing nurses in other areas and other states. The California Nurses Association currently is organized in five states. The Maryland-based United American Nurses is organizing members in 12 states, and the Massachusetts Nursing Association is primarily representing nurses in the state of Massachusetts. Now, this organization will have about 150,000 members, and their new name will be called the United American Nurses, then hyphen National Nurses Organizing Committee. And I think that that is the way we see a lot of press releases coming out of the National Nurses Organizing Committee, and that is because a lot of these recent press releases focusing on nurse staffing issues have been coming out from their organized efforts. While we're talking about nurse staffing, I found a very interesting article. You know, we talk about nurse shortages, but the economy seems to have slowed down the retention problems of some hospitals because nurses are either reluctant to move from job to job or are holding on to their guaranteed paychecks right now while family members have been laid off. And nurses that might have been planning to retire in the next year or so are sticking around because their 401k and retirement accounts have fallen seriously and they no longer can afford to retire. All of these things seem to be items that are causing this problem. And this comes from a story out of Ohio, but I think this is probably an issue nationwide. Now, it doesn't say that this is going to significantly slow the nurse shortage that's anticipated over the next 10 to 15 years, because we all expect the economy to bounce back eventually. And so we're still going to have nurses that are retiring. Finally, I picked up a health-related story from nearby University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, and they are experiencing an outbreak of meningitis that seems to be linked to three students in one of the school's sororities or fraternities, and the third student was hospitalized yesterday, and that would be February 14th, so this past weekend, with meningitis. Now, obviously, this is something that we need to be very concerned about if you are working with populations that live in close proximity, as college students do, and are swapping fluids of one sort or another. Obviously, we need to be educating this group about safe practices when there is an outbreak like this, and that's one of the focuses of the student organizations and college community. They have put out advisories and information on the university website, and they have canceled some parties and events where they believe there was going to be some issues. So this is something that we are going to need to continue to educate people about. Now, the article does say that they named it as a virus, and I'm not sure, based on the fact that students were hospitalized, if this is an outbreak of a viral meningitis. I more likely suspect that it is meningococcal, bacterially originated meningitis. So if that is probably the case, it bears further thought, and it leads us into this week's tip and trick of the week. So for this week's tip of the week, we're going to talk a little bit about meningitis and do a little bit of review on what we're talking about. Now, I talked about viral and bacterial. Obviously, many of us know already that there are two primary infectious sources of meningitis, viral meningitis and bacterial meningitis. As is often the case, bacterial forms of diseases like this are much more serious because of their rapid onset and because of the specific nature of meningitis itself and the closed system that is the cranium. We end up having severe issues when you have a rapidly advancing infection, as bacterial infections often are. And so what we end up with when we have cases of bacterial meningitis are rapid onset, severe inflammation of the meninges, and in many cases, or in some cases, death and severe disability, at least temporarily. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. There's a lot of resources at the website in the show notes for this episode, so I urge you to head over and check them out. There's some excellent resources I found at the National Institutes of Health, as well as the CDC sites and information. And if you have patients that are concerned about meningitis or dealing with a family member who has meningitis, there are some great patient tutorial resources at the National Institutes of Health site that I've linked to their main links page. So you want to check that out. There's some great resources there for patients and for nurses and students. So just, I would urge you to follow up. So what are we talking about when we talk about meningitis? Well, first of all, the two big questions you have to ask are, is it viral or bacterial? And these are going to be questions that are going to be assessed in an emergency department most likely. Because if someone is showing signs and symptoms of meningitis, you don't sit there and wonder if it's bacterial or viral. They need to be assessed rapidly and gotten to the hospital. Because if it is bacterial, even a small delay in treatment can cause severe after effects and consequences, including death. So they need to get rapid and broad spectrum antibiotics on board because we need to find out and treat it if it is bacterially based. So what are some of the common symptoms that we see in a patient with meningitis? Well, some of the more common symptoms that we might run into are generally a high fever, severe headache, and complaints of a stiff neck are the most common symptoms that we think of. Now, in a patient that's old enough to complain about such things or to define adequately what that problem is, are the keys here. Of course, any patient with any communication deficit of any kind or younger patients, pediatric patients, are not likely to be able to talk about that complaint. And so you need to really assess children and the very elderly and the people who have communication deficits very carefully. Now, bacterial meningitis can have a very rapid onset over just a couple of hours. You know, just like any other bacterial infection, one minute you can feel fine and the next minute you can be just miserable. You think of ear infections, strep throat, anything like that that has a rapid onset, it can be very sudden and very severe. And then it's no different in meningitis. Several other symptoms to look for include nausea, vomiting. They may complain of light bothering them, including bright lights. So if someone's complaining that the lights are too bright, is another sign. And this is because of starting to have some effect on the cranial nerves, and the optic nerve is affected as well. They may have nausea and vomiting, dizziness. They may start to act confused because we're going to start to have altered mental status set in. As the inflammation begins to cause increased intracranial pressure, there's going to be decreased cerebral perfusion. If you are assessing this patient and you are doing any kind of vital signs, you'll want to be looking for Cushing's triad. That's a sign of increased intracranial pressure. And the things to look for are that you have a patient who has an increased heart rate and increased blood pressure, but a decreased respiratory rate. And this is because, if you think about it, it makes sense. You're going to see that increased heart rate and increased blood pressure as the heart tries to overcome the increased pressure in the brain and get the perfusion into the brain. So they're trying to reperfuse an area that's not being perfused very well. However, the intracranial pressure increase is causing a decreased respiratory drive. So that's the reasoning behind the Cushing's triad, but it's one of those signs to look for in patients where you suspect increased intracranial pressure. Other things to look for in addition to the other signs are just signs of illness. Viral meningitis may take a couple of days to develop fully, so there may be a less rapid onset. Also, because this infection may have originated in another infection in the body, patients may have been complaining of general flu symptoms for the last several days. And so that could be where the virus has spread from another part of the body into the brain. It is important to have these patients get to see a definitive care immediately because we can't tell from looking at them if they have bacterial or viral meningitis. We have to assume that it's bacterial and treat it rapidly. There are some vaccines out there to treat some of the most common causes of meningitis, but there are a significant portion of the population may not be receiving it as a matter of course. And as of this time, it's not necessarily required by all providers and schools like some of the earlier childhood vaccines are. One of the things is there will be need for a spinal tap. We need to draw off some cerebrospinal fluid for culture and sensitivity, and we need to make sure that this is being done as part of a general cause of treatment. So if you have someone coming into an emergency department and you have suspicions that they might have meningitis, be prepared for that particular test to be ordered and assist physician or whoever is performing that procedure to take care of that. And you may need to review what's done in that particular case. Now, bacterial meningitis, a number of antibiotics are typically used to treat bacterial meningitis, but it's very important to treat it appropriately. If it's not brought in to play rapidly, the risk of dying can be much higher than normal. Typically, meningitis risk of bacterial rates of death tend to be around 10 to 15%. However, if patients are presenting in the emergency department with moderate to severe symptoms already in place, those numbers can go up as high as 50%. So once we see some more severe signs and symptoms, including confusion, altered mental status, whatever, we are going to be more likely to see patients presenting with a type of disease that they're going to have a hard time coming back from. So really, we have to educate patients about this. And that starts with looking at your patient population, just like we do so many different times, is looking specifically at the patients you're dealing with. If you're dealing with a patient population that lives in close proximity to each other, perhaps you're in an urban environment where a lot of your young adult patients are, you know, have roommates and are sharing, sharing bathroom facilities, sharing housing facilities, or a college environment. If you're a nurse and in and around a college campus, it's very important to educate your patients on some of the things to watch out for and encourage them to perhaps get the vaccines that are available for some of the bacterial strains. Of course, nothing covers everything, but the most common vaccines out there now are covering four of the most common strains seen in the U.S. So it's something to keep track of. So that's a look at meningitis, a brief overview. As I said, I have multiple resources to fall back on, and I urge you to, as always, check out the resources and links in the show notes. You know, I can present a quick overview here, but I cannot give you all of the information or how it applies specifically to you, and that's why it's your job to follow up and see how this applies to your nursing practice. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show. Remind you to head over and check out the show notes in this episode, where you will find links to everything we've talked about, the news articles, as well as this week's tip of the week on meningitis. That's all available for you over at nursingshow.com. Also, don't be afraid to get back in touch with me. I love getting emails from you, so please, please send in your emails, your questions, suggestions, and heck, correct me if I've made a mistake. Go ahead and get in touch with me here. Send those in to comments@nursingshow.com. That's it. That's going to wrap up this episode. I will close out with some excellent PodSafe music, and this is a song from Matthew Ebel. We've played his songs a lot here on the show, and it's one you've probably heard here before if you haven't already listened to the show quite frequently. But this is one of my favorites of his, and I thought I'd play it again. This is Lost My Way by Matthew Ebel. You can check out Matt's website in the show notes, and if you like what you hear, check it out and let him know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. That's it. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I want to remind all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care. Doom 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 do
up hungover again. And I vow right now it's the last time I give in. So to commemorate, I'll go out and tie one on. I guess I'll quit drinking when you're gone. If I put off till tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Well, I finally gave up smoking too. At least I thought that's what I told myself I'd do. Then in a cloud of smoke, my car moved to LA. My girlfriend got towed away. Well, if I put off till tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, come on, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Well, I'll grab it with both hands. Lord knows I need a change of plans. And if I put off till tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Ooh.